This week's episode of Bliss to the Podcast is brought to you by that expansive feeling in your chest when you taste something delicious or see something genuinely beautiful.
Well, I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Welcome to Bliss to the Podcast. I am your host, Patch Drury. I am very, very happy that you are here. I'm very happy that you have made the decision to download and listen to this episode because it is an incredible one. My guest today is Anella Wetter. Anella is a writer. She spent a lot of time successfully in the corporate world, specifically in the corporate world connected to education. And then she transitioned into a life of coaching. And then from coaching, she has become a full-time writer. And this is the kind of conversation that I dreamed of having when I created this podcast. Expansive and weird at times and a little bit challenging, not in the sense that it's hard to listen to, but challenging in the sense that it challenges your preconceived notions about the way your life and the way the world works. And so I'm really excited for you to listen to it. Anella took some ideas that I had and helped me expand them, better express them using the wisdom and the knowledge that she has. I really love Anella. I've not known her very long, probably less than a year. Well, maybe right at about a year, less than a year. But she has been really an incredible presence in my life, even as little time as we've spent together. She is inspiring. She is one of those like-minded people that you just hope that you find and become a member of your tribe. And that's what I would say Anella is. Anella is a member of my tribe, and I can't wait for you to hear what she has to say. This episode continues our six-part series on dissecting the monomyth, and Anella specifically represents in this episode the road of trials. The road of trials is, we say in the episode, it's like the training montage. It's the point in the movie where you have to start shedding fat so you can become fighting trim. You have to get rid of the stuff that is holding you back and weighing you down. And that's what this episode is about. And so strap in, buckle in, do all the things that get you safely attached to the car, because this one's going to take off and it's going to take you places that hopefully you weren't expecting and that hopefully really improve your life and your pursuit of bliss. Here it is, my conversation with Anella Wetter. Are you following your bliss right now?
I am following my bliss right now.
So for people who may not recognize the name Anella Wetter, what is your bliss? What are you doing?
My primary bliss is I'm a writer, and even to speak those words is part of my bliss, because I've just stepped into that, claiming that space.
Saying that you're a writer.
I am a writer. And then showing up every day, asking myself, well, what would a writer do today?
Right? So here's, I read a book a couple of years ago that was, I think it was called Daily Rituals, but it was about how all these great thinkers, and specifically not always writers, had a daily practice that to be able to write, they knew, get up at this time, breakfast at this time, and it was very specific. Do you have that? Do you have a daily ritual to get you to the place of writing?
I do have a daily ritual to get me to that place.
Give us a little bit of it.
So it begins with a morning meditation. Grateful to have created the space in my life, first of all, to follow my bliss, which is tangential, but maybe also primary. So morning meditation, really before I've done very much at all, I try not to have many conversations. My sweet husband brings my coffee to the bedside table.
Does he specifically not speak to you much?
He is so aware of my needs.
Let
and my
you
desire,
ease into it. Yeah.
Right. Which is very kind of him. Because by the time by that time he's been up for about an hour and a half, so he's just full of conversation.
Gotcha.
So it's very sweet of him to give me that time. So morning meditation, followed by some sort of morning movement. For me it's usually yoga upstairs on my mat. And then I open up my paper journal and set a timer for 22 minutes, and I just write what comes up.
Okay.
So that's how I begin the day, the rituals that begin the day. And then I take what's in those journals, here's some of them, and whatever feels most exciting or whatever feels like the biggest puzzle, that's when I open my computer, and in the blocks of time that I've literally put on
set
my calendar
aside for writing. Yeah.
Right. That's when I begin that process of transposing the raw material to something.
Well, for a lot of people, I think following their bliss and even something like writing may seem like a esoteric, overly artsy process, but it takes structure, it takes regimen, and it takes every morning saying, here are the blocks of time on my schedule that I'm going to commit to this. So I think a lot of people who haven't followed their bliss might think, well, that's not my world. My world is get up and show up at work at a certain time and work until lunch and then work until the clock. But genuinely following your bliss, if you don't treat it like a job, it's probably going to burn out pretty soon. It doesn't seem sustainable that way.
I would completely agree. And so I had that corporate life, right?
Okay.
I had 30 years of a career. I was a teacher, which is highly structured.
Sure.
We ring a bell every hour to tell you to do something
so that you
different.
Know what to do next.
And then a corporate career where really customers dictated what I did. And so I showed up every day knowing exactly what to do because there were these things to be done.
Right.
And when I left that career a couple years ago and stepped into this space of following my bliss and not really knowing exactly what that would look like, what ultimately occurred to me was that I had the freedom for the first time in my life, and I didn't know how to live in that world because everything had always been regimented. I mean, truthfully, I never left school before I was 36 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
K-12.
Right.
I went immediately to undergraduate, then became a teacher. And so I left a highly regimented world for a little bit less regimented, but another 15 years on top of that. So having this space of freedom
was it
really
hard to
scary.
Do? Yeah, was it? Yeah. Did you feel yourself wasting time at first because you didn't know what to do?
Wasting time under this notion that I'm just going to allow the creative process to come to me. I'm just going to trust that the moment of inspiration will arise.
I have a lot of opinions about that. So let me ask you about this one. This is one I've spoken controversially about before. Do you believe in writer's block?
Only if you make it a thing.
I feel like it's a luxury. I feel like if you have writer's block, it's because you have decided you can afford to have writer's block.
Yeah. I actually also think it's fear.
True.
Right.
Which is also something you allow yourself, and that's not a judgment. We all allow ourselves fear in different areas.
Right.
But it's kind of one of those things that I used to have to produce creative content on a weekly basis. And I always kind of felt like, well, something's got to come out. I don't have the luxury for it not to come out. I don't get paid if it doesn't come out. And so to me, and that sounds, when you say it's a luxury, it sounds really judgmental and sounds a little uncompassionate. But I think there's some truth to that, that you allow yourself to become blocked.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I've experienced, and I'll just say what I've experienced instead of try to extrapolate it to all creatives. What I've experienced is that what I put down on paper at first is pretty much sucks.
Yeah.
And it's okay, because without that, then there's nothing to follow.
Right.
And so what I have become a student of, and creating the structure has given me the environment to become a student of, what's my process?
Right.
So it's the paper journal. I have them divided by decade of my life.
Pretty good.
Right? I have these envelopes with photographs of me from that decade. And I spend that 22 minutes just playing in one of those decades.
And you'd never release those journals, I'm sure, because that's not what the finished product is supposed to look like.
That's completely right.
And it's that whole concept that you hear a lot of times is that good is better than great. You know it's not finished.
Yeah.
but you have to get it out.
Exactly.
And so shipping mm-hmm. is better than shipping a perfect product. Mm-hmm. So just get it out and then fix it later.
A la Seth Godin, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's move on here a little bit. So you're following your bliss. In my experience, bliss usually comes after a call. Mm-hmm. So something, you looked at the world, you looked at your life, you looked at something and said, this isn't quite right. Something's amiss. Yeah. And you felt compelled to pursue. So what was your call? What brought you to the place of being a writer?
So I was sitting at a Panera Bread in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Okay.
With a colleague.
Okay.
When I was still in my corporate world, and we were seated at a window, and a car turned into the perpendicular parking space, an older lady, and instead of hitting the brake, she hit the gas and crashed into that window.
Okay.
It threw me from my seat about 4 feet across the room. No one was hurt badly, which is great, but the whole bank gad of windows shifted by about a foot.
Yikes.
And yeah, it was really a yikes. And I had this clear moment where I thought, yeah, this is not the way I want it to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting in a Panera Bread in Johnson City, Tennessee, having, you know, spent a little time that morning in a school district and going again to spend some time in a school district, which was part of my corporate career, it just paled in that moment
mm-hmm.
to what I believed my mark was to be.
Okay.
And I didn't know at that moment that it was writing. No idea. But that was the... That was really the decision point. No, it was months later that I took action and left my corporate career, but that was the beginning.
Okay. Well, that I appreciate that that's almost cinematic in the sense of you had a near-death experience that woke you up in that moment, and you said, nope, this isn't... if I were to go right now, I would be leaving the life that I didn't plan, or maybe the life that you planned, but not the life that you wanted.
Right.
So... I appreciate that. The great thing about a call to adventure is someone can listen to that and say, well, does that mean I have to go through a near-death experience? And you don't.
Yeah.
You just have to be at a moment where you look at what is and look at what could be and realize, oh, these are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's great. So from there, you get your call to adventure. A lot of times people refuse the call. And that's usually done out of fear. Like you don't want to see your life change, or you don't feel like you have the ability to progress. Did you refuse the call for a while?
I absolutely did. So the way it sounded for me was my husband, who has been one of my one of the greatest models in my life of following his bliss, was doing that. So
okay.
He had left his corporate career 2 years prior to this Panera Bread incident. And so I had a lot of energy in me that sounded like, I just got to suck it up and keep doing what I'm doing.
It's only safe for one of us to leave.
And this girl, you know, I'm the rule follower. I toe the line. I sacrifice for others, right? That old story. And I said those words aloud to him one afternoon. And he looked at me and he said, so quit. Quit.
Okay.
Do it. We'll figure it out. So quit. And of course, that wasn't what I wanted to hear, because then there was nothing, standing in the way, because I had assigned so many reasons to the fact that he had been brave.
And he showed you that those reasons were meaningless, that they didn't have to be adhered to.
That he wasn't going to buy into that story.
Right.
And when he made it really clear that I was the only person on the planet buying into the story.
Well, that's great, because that actually progresses us around the monomyth, because you get your call to adventure, you refuse the call, and then usually what helps you pass that point is supernatural aid or a mentor or a guide who pushes you and says, no, this thing you're scared of is not something you need to be scared of. And so I had a big, long discussion with a friend of mine, and he's like, you know, I get what you're doing with this podcast, but do you think the monomyth is absolute? And so then we had like a 20-minute conversation about what absolute means. But basically what he was asking is, does it always follow this pattern? And I would say, no, it doesn't always. But that pattern is there for a reason. And so your story follows that pattern. You had the call, you felt the fear, and then here comes the aid to push you over that threshold. And so that brings us to where I really wanted to talk to you this week. Once you cross the threshold, you start the journey to your bliss, there's a step called the road of trials. And so the road of trials, when you're watching a movie, is the training montage a lot of times. And so it's where you get in shape, you get in fighting trim. And so in say a boxing movie, this is where the guy has to run behind the car to get into shape because he's got layers of fat that are holding him down that he needs to lose, right? So that he can be an effective boxer. And so this is the point where the universe comes in and it helps us get rid of the stuff that we don't need, the things that are part of ourselves that are holding us back. The monomyth tracks with mythology very strongly. And you and I have talked about this a little bit. There's a story, there's a myth about a character called Inanna. Inanna was the Persian queen of heaven. And so she decided she wanted to go take a trip into hell, basically, into the underworld. And so to go on this trip, she put on all her queenly arrayment, her crown, her necklaces, her breastplate, she had her rod. And so she starts going into hell. And as she's going into hell, she passes through seven gates. And at every gate, there's a guard, a gatekeeper who says to her, sorry, but to go past this gate, you need to take this off. And it would be her crown or her necklace or her earrings. And every time she would say, why? And he would say, the rules of the underworld are not to be questioned. If you want to keep going, you got to lay it down. So at every gate, she would lay down another object to eventually, when she got to the underworld, she was completely naked, standing in front of her sister, who was the queen of the underworld. And so what we take from this story is that sometimes to make the journey into ourselves, to go where we need to go, we have to lay some stuff down. And it's usually stuff that we think is really important to who we are, because that's what Inanna thought. She was like, this is my queenly garb. And when they told her she had to lay it down, she was like, why? Why do I have to put this down? And they said, well, because those are the rules. And so that's kind of what I want to get to you about, is to pursue your bliss. Were there parts of yourself, parts of the old Inanna that you had to let go of?
Many parts. And there was a bit of a chronology, so I think I'll start with some of the first things, which okay. was attaching my worth to an income, a salary,
okay.
a paycheck.
That is inborn in us from childhood, because mm-hmm. we are children of capitalism. Mm-hmm. So your worth mm-hmm. is based on how much money you can make.
Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of stories around that. And my abundance to allow me for the space to step into my bliss was because of that belief and that practice.
Not to get too personal, you had done well in the professional world, and that was one of the reasons it was easy for you to pursue writing, was because you had created an abundance for yourself.
Yeah. And therefore, when I stepped out of my corporate position, I didn't step out to be a writer. I stepped out to do something different, follow my bliss, and a thing that I have been super passionate about for years is yoga. And so in this, you know, online world and the concept of building a platform, I stepped out and created an online yoga program, and it was fun and amazing, and I had wonderful people sign up, and I led them on this journey to use yoga as a personal growth tool. And it was great, but it fell short of like fully satisfying something. And so therefore I stopped.
Okay.
And the next thing that I incorporated, which actually grew from this yoga program, was coaching, one-on-one coaching. So a client who was in the yoga program said, hey, would you continue to work with me one-on-one? And that it was a step further, I would say, closer to my bliss. And it's something that I currently still do.
You still do some coaching.
Because it fills a part of me.
Yeah.
Also is a way that I can support other humans in this journey, and that's so gratifying. And then fast forward to about a year and 3 months after I left my corporate position, I was at a women's retreat that I was co-hosting, and we played this incredible board game called The Wish. I'll tell you all about it sometime. And you begin the game as a player by writing down what your biggest, hairiest, most audacious wish is. And what came up for me and what I allowed myself to write down was to be a writer.
Okay.
So just to review briefly, I had been an English major, an English teacher. And I felt like, you know, sort of always, what's the phrase? Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
So you're talking about writers.
Talking about writers, yeah. Living vicariously through
them. Celebrating their craft.
Right.
But, yeah.
But never claiming that for myself. And so that was the moment where I said, I'm going to be a writer. And even in that moment, I didn't really... Like, I didn't know what I was going to be writing.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But I knew that because it scared the hell out of me, that there was something there.
Yeah. The thing about bliss a lot of times is if you're not quite willing to follow it, you'll follow it a little bit. You'll get close to what it was. So you were an English teacher because it was not writing, but it was, you were playing in that ballpark a little bit. For me, I knew some form of content creation, of expressing myself, putting out new stuff was kind of what drove me. And so I found myself working at a church, making the videos they wanted to make, not making the videos I wanted to make, but making their videos. And so it was the same kind of thing where you get close, like you're just off the bullseye, but you're not quite there. The other reason that I felt like you were really appropriate to talk about this is because the seven gates that Inanna walks through, the seven things she puts down, I feel they line up really well with the seven chakras. And so as part of yoga, I'm sure you have spent time in it. And so the process of putting this stuff down is a lot like the process of cleansing your chakras. And so... that process, and you can correct me on this because you're closer to the expert than I am, that process of cleansing your chakras is kind of letting go of parts of yourself that have calcified and built up and that you've hoarded little thoughts about yourself
stories
that maybe aren't true. So you have real life experience and then yogic experience. Is that a word? Yogic? Yogic experience with this road of trials process.
Well, completely. And the first chakra, the root chakra, is all about safety and security.
Right. And so that's
about...
almost the first one that has to go, right?
Yes.
To follow your bliss, you have to say, I am not, it's okay if I maybe don't eat as much for a little while. Mm-hmm. And that was a hard one for me. When I first started this process, I was convinced I'm just going to go find a salary and benefits. And Sarah was like, I think it, my wife Sarah was, I think it'd be more beneficial to you to find a job where you're your own boss. And I couldn't imagine that because I was so scared of going hungry. We just had a new baby. And what if he didn't eat? And all these things and all this fear, the fear that wanted to keep me from progressing into a new life. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the first things that had to go. And that 3 years later, that is still being beat out of me on a daily basis, you know,
and maybe forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I
and
think
that's okay.
Yeah. I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
The lesson we've had to learn is that there's always enough. Sometimes you don't think there's going to be enough, but I think if you trust that there's always enough, there's always enough.
Mm.
There's not always extra, or you have to get your mind to the place that's right to bring in extra. But if you trust there's enough, there'll be enough. So
trust is such an important word.
Yeah. So are you comfortable walking through these chakras, or is that...
Yeah.
Okay, so second chakra.
Mm-hmm. What second is... chakra is the creative space.
Okay.
Right? So owning my creativity.
Okay.
Right? Owning that aspect of myself instead of hiding it.
Saying I'm a writer. I'm okay saying I'm a writer out loud. If I'm at a dinner party and somebody says, "What do you do?" I'm not going to say, "Well, I left corporate." But instead, you say, "Oh, I'm glad you asked. I'm a writer." Mm-hmm. So, okay, mm-hmm. great. So
owning it. Third.
So don't be scared of lack. Mm-hmm. Own your creativity. Third, mm-hmm. go ahead.
The solar plexus,
okay.
the seat of our power.
Okay.
Right? So right. stepping into this space and owning it. I said earlier, I ask myself the question on a daily basis, what would Anella the writer do today?
Okay.
Right? Like claiming that space and taking that action.
After the money one, this has been the one that I have fought with the most, because I have bowed before authority all my life. Mm-hmm. And there's so many authority figures asking us to do that. Parents, government, church, family. And so being able to say, and I there are people I know who will listen to this that'll be like, "Man, such a sinner." this is still considered a sinful point of view, but I had to decide I am the captain of my own life.
Captain of your ship.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I'm not compassionate towards other people. It doesn't mean I don't consider other people, but ultimately it's my authority that matters. And so that's the third one.
It is.
All right.
It completely is. The fourth, the heart chakra.
Okay.
Right? So can I be compassionate enough with myself? Can I love myself enough to do this thing that's calling me?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. And does that compassion, do you think, in this step, here's the story that comes to mind every time I hear the word compassion. So Sir Percival, who's one of the knights, one of King Arthur's knights.
Yes.
So he's in search for the Grail, the Holy Grail. And he's in this Grail castle, and there's this king who's severely injured. And Sir Percival's like, "Don't ask a bunch of questions. Don't ask why he's injured." And because he doesn't ask, he doesn't hear the story of how he got injured, which would ultimately lead Sir Percival to the Grail. So it was eventually when he came back to the castle and he asked the king what happened, that's when he found the Grail. And so the point of that is compassion is the thing that drives us, compassion for other people. Like, you have your bliss, you are your own authority, but you have to listen to your compassion. And I would assume that probably means your compassion for yourself, like you just said, and your compassion for the world.
Because if I can't have compassion for myself first,
you're never
going
to get
to
the world.
Right? It's the love your neighbor as yourself.
Okay.
Well, it starts here.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Keep going.
Throat chakra, right? The next one, the fifth one, is the throat, which, I mean, the very literal way, right? Mm-hmm. Using my voice.
Yeah.
Right?
Saying your thing.
Right. But then there's also this element of, well, what's true for me? What's true in my experience? So this self-compassion, and they're close to each other, heart and throat, right? So this self-compassion, this way I've been able to be gentle with myself, has really opened up my allowing myself to see the stories of my life and be compassionate enough with myself to write them.
To write them and to talk about them. That this feels like... I'm ashamed to say I've not read her stuff, but her YouTube videos are always awesome, is Brené Brown, where she talks about putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like the throat chakra. It's like your willingness to say, okay, here I am. Here's my truth. Here's what matters to me. Here's what I have to say. And she says this one thing, and I've researched it because it almost sounds too good to be true, but it, like, the word courage comes from...
tell
the truth, yeah,
of who you are,
yeah and it's so good that I'm like, oh, I want that to be true so bad. And so I'll sit and research it every once in a while, like, just trying, like, what did she read that, like, told her this was true? But anyway, that's you have to learn to say it. Mm-hmm. Say it out loud, because mm-hmm. we get told all of our lives, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Stop talking, stop saying this thing, shut up. And so passing through that gate, cleansing that chakra, means learning how to embody your own voice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, keep going.
And may I add just one thing to that, which is when we tell our own story, it's not in isolation. So it's also finding the courage to tell the story that involves my family.
Yeah.
People that I love deeply and who love me deeply, and being willing to claim what's true in my experience from my perspective.
Okay.
And believe that it has a purpose.
Yeah. Okay. I love that.
Mm-hmm. So, third eye.
Okay.
Chakra.
All right.
So the seat
kind of right in your forehead. Mm-hmm. Kind of
between your eyebrows, the seat of our intuition. So biologically, there's gland, the pineal gland, that literally has a lens. It's in our brain. It literally has a lens on it.
Okay.
So that's the third eye.
Yeah.
It's that knowing that we have all experienced, right? That little flash of intuition. That moment where a truth goes from not knowing to absolutely knowing, from not believing to absolutely believing. And that has been a huge part of my process in those moments where I piece together a pattern that I have of showing up in the world with its origin.
Okay.
And then being able to, through the story of that experience, better see the person I am.
Okay.
Better know myself.
And trust yourself.
And trust,
yeah,
that experience was incredibly important to my journey. Otherwise, how would I know the thing now?
Yeah. Have you heard people talk about the bicameral mind?
No.
So it's this idea that, you know, we know our brain exists in hemispheres, left side and right side. And the theory says that centuries and centuries ago, the thing that regulates those two halves didn't exist. So people like Alexander the Great or Abraham in the Bible, or really anybody in the Bible, when the left side of their brain would speak to them, they would recognize it as the voice of God. And so so what people try to say is these people who felt like they were hearing God were really just hearing themselves. That's meaningful to me because I think our intuition, the left side of our brain, is a piece of divinity. It is a piece of whatever that source is that created us all. And so in learning to listen to that part of yourself, you are, in a sense, learning to listen to a transcendent voice. It's your voice still, but it's a transcendent voice. And so a lot of this stuff is just occurring to me as we talk, and I love those conversations. Yeah. So I'm sorry to keep interrupting you.
No, it's wonderful. I mean, it is the direct link to the divine.
Absolutely.
Right?
To our bliss, which is that nugget of God that lives inside of us. So.
And we all have access to it.
Absolutely.
Just to say that so directly.
Yeah, this isn't something special that Anella has.
It's not reserved for Patrick. We all have access to it.
You just have to learn to listen to it. You have to get rid of those things that are blocking you from it.
Step away from the fear.
Yeah.
And into the possibility of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last one. There's one more
crown chakra, the seventh, okay. Right? So literally the crown of the head. And that is the portal, if you will, right?
Yeah.
Where that connection to divinity is represented in the human body.
Yeah.
Of course, we see this physical body, this structure. What we don't see is the energetic body, which is about 2 to 3 feet around us, the aura of humans. And that energetic field then connects to, you know, all that is.
Yeah.
And so this ability that we all have to open,
right?
Be open-minded. There's a phrase that we often use, open-minded, to receive from what we can't see, what we can't necessarily reach out and touch, but what we can learn to trust.
I've said that two of these were especially troubling for me, and I'm realizing they're all troubling for me in a lot of ways. But this one, because
welcome
I was
to being human.
Yeah. And God bless the people in my life growing up and everything. But like I grew up growing in a Christianity that ultimately, what we hear about God is that He is so much better than us that even the best thing we'll ever do, our most righteous act, looks like a dirty rag compared to Him. And that had such an effect on me. Like, you grow up hating yourself in a lot of ways. And that's never the intent. And I think that's a misunderstanding of even the scripture. But that's how you grow up. And so to realize you have a portal to that transcendent. That transcendent lives inside of you as a part of your bliss. And you just have to clear out the things that are that tell you what God is like. God doesn't like you. God is mad at you. God is so much better than you. I think once you kind of clear that stuff out, then you have opened yourself to really pursue and live in that peace. Mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I'm rambling so much here, so no. Thank you for letting me do that.
I would love to add that I had a very similar upbringing. Yeah. In terms of my family belief system, and a paternal grandmother who wore the burden of being a Christian. Mm-hmm. So heavily.
Yeah.
That she went crazy. She ended up in, you know, a psychiatric ward. She heard voices and thought it was evil. Mm-hmm. And took on the failings of the world as like her own personal burden, which I can see now with the knowledge that I have that she was empathic and highly sensitive.
Yeah.
But in her frame, there was something wrong with her.
She couldn't carry it. She couldn't process mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. My wife tells me constantly that I'm tortured, that I carry that weight. My parents used to say that to me too, that some of us just, we feel the weight of those around mm-hmm. us. And this process we're talking about, cleansing your chakras or the road of trials, is a way of kind of like readjusting your lens so yes. that you can take all that on yes. and not be destroyed by it.
Absolutely. I believe that she offered me many gifts, including my witnessing, mm-hmm. what I just described. And I remember being in fourth grade and saying to my closest group of girlfriends, yeah, I don't believe that. I don't believe that we show up here for a few years and based on what we do here, then forever we're in heaven or hell. Like, that just doesn't make sense. Of course, I could never say that to my family.
Sure.
But in that moment, I was on the playground. I remember it precisely. I knew that that was not the full truth.
That's a pretty freeing fourth grade experience.
Well, yet I had to keep it amongst my closest sure, girlfriends, sure. most of whom were like, you are so going to get in trouble for saying that.
You've pretty much resigned yourself to hell, so right, congratulations.
Right, yeah. But that has now played such a big role in my understanding of yeah. who I am and what I really knew, and stepping more and more into claiming that truth. That
you don't have to walk around as a potential object of wrath.
Right.
That you can right. you can relax a little bit.
And that God is not out there somewhere.
He's right inside. Here. That's
within.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I know this is when I created this podcast, this is the kind of conversation I dreamed of having. This is what it is, esoteric and weird and out there, but still really in there too, and like meaningful. And so thank you for being a part of this.
It's my greatest honor.
Well, thank you. I had talked to my wife about this a while back, that I considered calling the podcast hashtag blissed, because of that hashtag blessed that people put on things.
Where I'm familiar with that. Okay.
People talking about how great their life is sometimes will say hashtag blessed. And the little, like, easily annoyed, cynical part of myself hates that hashtag. And I kind of wanted to just, like, subvert it a little bit. But I was talking to her and I was like, you know, but part of what I could do is to kind of, like, even subvert that idea is at the end of every podcast, try to give a blessing to the person that I'm talking to. Mm. And growing up in church, I never knew what a blessing was. You know, like they were like, you know, Jacob and Esau fought over a blessing. And you'd ask you, well, what is that? And then your Sunday school teacher's like, well, we're not really sure. And so I am sure today what a blessing is. Maybe not in a Sunday school sense, but in a real world sense. And so I want to say to you, the Joseph Campbell quote I go back to over and over again is that the effect of a vital person vitalizes. And so you following your bliss seems like such an important thing to me, an important thing to you, and an important thing to the people around you. And so I just want to encourage you to keep at it. And thank you for giving the example of someone who came up in corporate America and said, I don't have to be my earning potential. I don't have to be what I contribute to this machine. I don't have to be my how good of a cog I am. Instead, I can be my own guide in this, and I can be my own thing. And so thank you for that. I hope that continues. I hope it accomplishes whatever you want it to accomplish. And thank you very much for being a guest on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Did I tell you this was an incredible interview? I hope you took something from it. I hope it inspires you to keep your eyes open for your call to adventure, for signs of your bliss. And I hope it doesn't take a car coming through the side of Panera for you to figure it out. And beyond that, once you get the call to adventure, I hope you figure out the parts of yourself, the ways that you think that you need to set down and move aside and cleanse in order to welcome a new version of yourself, a version of you that is willing and able to follow your bliss and live your life the way you choose to live it, the way it was meant to be lived. So anyway, this has been Bliss the Podcast. Big thanks to Anella Wetter. If you want to check out her coaching talents, you can find her at anellawetter.com, and keep an eye open for everything she's doing writing wise. So anyway, thank you guys. We'll see you next week.